Welcome to Cider Chat. In this episode, we're headed to Pennsylvania, and we're going to a very particular region known as the Fruit Belt, and it's called Adams County. And we're going to be speaking to two makers who have teamed up to create their own cidery, each having their own orchard and farm. And that would be Ben Kishbaugh and Troy Lehman of Big Hill Cider Works. And we're also going to be heading up to the top of Big Hill itself, which is all to say that this is the perfect opportunity to grab a glass and join this chat. Hello, my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. We are counting up to the 300th episode, which is only 10 episodes away. And between now and then, I'm going to be rolling out all the different recordings I had on my summer cider-fueled road trip to Pennsylvania and New York. I've already posted two. The first one was with Elizabeth Ryan of Hudson Valley Farmhouse Cider. And last week was with Dan Scheffler of Spacetime Mead and Cider Works in Dunmore, Pennsylvania, which is up by Scranton, Pennsylvania. So that's considered northeastern PA. I mean, Pennsylvania is a huge state. But in this episode, we're further to the south, almost at the border of Maryland in Adams County, the fruit belt of this beautiful commonwealth. So we're beginning to that featured conversation in a wee bit, but first, a little bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Cider Chat is listener supported, and that's how I'm able to keep on producing this podcast each week and rolling it out to you. I use two primary mediums, which is one, a donate button at ciderchat.com, and also there you could find a link to the Patreon page for Cider Chat. And Patreon happens to be a website that helps content creators like myself keep on doing our work and allow folks who get value from the podcast to help support it. Thus, it is my pleasure to introduce you to Shava, who wrote me a little email answering some questions. One is a question of, what is your journey with cider? And she writes, I am from wine country in California, and I have always been interested in apples and orchards. In Sonoma County in California, many old orchards were grubbed up to make space for more profitable vineyards. So I wanted to explore apples and cider and see if I could bring back some interest in apples, both for the sake of making an exceptional cider, which at the time was unavailable in the area, and also to increase bio and agricultural diversity. My original plan was to come to the UK, learn a bit about making cider, and then go back to California and give it a go. Instead, I came here and fell in love with cider and a cider maker, and was lucky enough to join Bill on his 6-acre small holding to plant apples, grow trees, and build up what is now Welsh Mountain Cider. Bill had already been making live cider for some years. There were a lot of old orchards full of apples not being used in the area. So Bill and his friends decided to see if they could collect the fruit and make cider. Bill's dad is also a cider maker in Somerset on a small scale, so it seemed like the obvious thing to do. At Welsh Mountain Cider, we make natural, live ciders from 100% freshly pressed fruit with no added water, sugar, or anything else. It is fermented using the native yeast, wild yeast from the apples, and is live cider, i.e., cider that has not been sulfided or pasteurized to kill the yeast after fermentation. We have over 450 varieties of apples growing on our land, so we have a lot of scope for playing with different blends of apples. I know, Shava, right now, people listening out there in Ciderville are like, whoa, including myself, 450 apples, which is, you know, at this juncture, I want to really encourage you out there in Ciderville to follow Shava at Welsh Mountain Cider on Instagram, because every day up comes a photo of a new apple, and it's just so overwhelming and cool and beautiful and inspiring to see all the different varieties they have. I mean, 450, that's a lot. She goes on with, we make still and naturally sparkling ciders that are matured on the lees and then bottled live and unfiltered. We make ciders ranging from light and crisp dessert fruit blends through to rich and tannic bittersweet styles. They are then cellar aged for anywhere between 6 months and 6 years. Okay, right? Think about that, folks. 6 months or up to 6 years. Yes, cider can be aged. I'm saying that. She doesn't have to. All right. Continuing to mature in the bottle. This allows the development of the complex aromas and rich flavors you would expect from a truly great expression of our native wine. Wow. I asked if you like a particular style of cider, and she wrote, "I am passionate about natural, wild fermented ciders. The depths of flavors and range of styles within natural cider are limitless." Yes, absolutely. And why not? I mean, why would you make anything else when you have that many varieties of apples and you could just continue to explore and educate the palate? Wow. I am just absolutely floored. And obviously you have a passion for this particular style. And we've covered this topic a bit on Cider Chat. And I know it's just going to be a continuing conversation. I really encourage anyone out there listening in Ciderville, if native natural yeast fermentations, live cider, as Shava's calling it, I might call it a wild ferment, is of interest to you, check out some of the Ask Ryan episodes. I've done two series. There was a quarantine quad series, and then just this year in 2021, we had another Ask Ryan series. He's a great resource. That's Ryan Monkman up at Fieldbird Cider in Canada. And we're always talking about how to do barrel aging of ciders and how to use the ambient yeast and just letting the cider live. And there's just so many other producers that I've spoken with who are always doing this. Another one that comes to mind is Kim Hamlin and Dan Rinke of Art and Science out in Oregon. The list goes on because this is a passion, and as we're getting finer and finer quantities of apples that can actually just be let to go on their own because they have the complete profile for cider making, this is going to be continuing. And, you know, more folks up in Vermont, I'm thinking about Tin Hat, that Teddy Weber, or the guys, the two brothers at Fable Farm Fermentory. A lot of folks are doing wild ferment, and the sky's the limit. So thank you so much, Shava. It's really cool to connect with you. We actually connected at CraftCon this past April when there was that online networking. It's kind of like dating, you know, another cider maker. You know, you have this like speed dating where you have about, 3 minutes to talk to somebody. And it was really nice to connect with Shava. We didn't know each other at that time. She didn't know about the podcast. And here we are, you know, a couple months later, she's decided to become a patron. And so I tip the glass to you and Bill for this here harvest and all future harvest and cider making endeavors. And thank you so much for becoming a patron of Cider Chat. That really means a lot. And we all appreciate and gain from your support. It's time now to grab a glass and join our conversation with Ben Kishbaugh and Troy Lehman of Big Hill Cider Works, based in Gardner's, Pennsylvania. Again, this is in Adams County, the fruit belt of Pennsylvania. And I'm going to start it by just kind of playing you some of the audio from a little TikTok that I did on my travels there. You could follow Cider Chat on TikTok. It's just at Cider Chat TikTok. And I actually did a part one through, 7 of my entire Cider Field road trip that I took this summer 2021. So let me roll to that next and bring you along to give you a little bit of a sense of the sights that I was seeing along the way to Big Hill Cider Works.
Making our way to Big Hill Cider Works. It's kind of a windy road. It's what you experience a lot when you get off the highway, but particularly to this. Now check out this barn here. quintessential, right, this region.
A common feature of Pennsylvania barns are two floors where you have an entrance on the top and the bottom. This isn't a bank barn. I'll show you one in another part, but check out that stonework. Oh, here's some apple trees. Apple trees. Now we know we're close by. Holy smokes. Those are some long rows of apple trees. This orchard happens to be right across the street from Big Hill. And here is the tasting room peeking behind the Dalgo crab apples. There's a better view. Isn't that pretty? And they have a little sign, too. Big Hill Cider Works.
Shortly upon arrival, Ben asked if I'd like to take a tour of both Troy's orchard and his own. And of course, I said yes, because why not? We hopped in his car, and before you know it, we were heading down the hill away from the tasting room, but not on the main road. We were on the dirt farm road of Troy Lehman's farm. Waved to Troy, who was finishing up a project, and then headed down into the orchard. Before you know it, we hung a left, and we were going right up the orchard row, and soon came out with a cornfield on one side where sadly it sounds like they had scrubbed up some apples and planted the corn, which I just can't get that. I just can't even like wrap my mind around it.
This to our left, all this corn 2 years ago was all apples from a friend of ours. He owns a couple hundred acres, and this was one of his farms that he pushed out. I guess they're going to plant it for a couple of years in corn, and then I don't know. The original plan was to plant cherries back in here, but I don't know if that's happening anymore.
Another little turn to the right. We're in another little magical spot.
This will just kind of jump out on the road here and zip back to my place.
Look at this. So here we are.
So we're driving, and this is the bottom part
of my farm. We hang another left here.
And this lower, this newer orchard section, this was planted in 2014 and 15. So these first eight rows are gold rush.
Nice.
And then we get into
long rows of apples.
A row and a half here. This is Kingston Black.
Right there.
The next row is Cava Blanc. It changes the brown snout up above.
Kind
of dip down through.
How are they all doing out here?
What's that, brown snout?
Yeah,
good.
Brown snout.
Here's three on the end.
Yeah.
They're loaded.
Oh, yeah, they're loaded.
They grow like
now
grapes.
We turn up the apple row here, and
sweet.
It's a high-density orchard.
Good, yeah, they
but
are.
But wide enough to drive your little vehicle up.
This is a row of Spitzenberg.
Okay.
They grow like crazy. They're overloaded and will probably break on me because I haven't had time to get down and thin them.
Yeah.
It's a really brittle tree. On your right, this is all Dabinet. And then on the beyond on the left, we'll come up here a little bit, and you can see the last five or six rows, that's all Dabinet.
There's apples in every direction.
Beautiful, Ben. What a beautiful spot.
High density, but really lush.
I know you're like working your butt off, no doubt.
We continued skirting Ben's orchard as he was pointing out the different varieties, and I'll tell you, this is a lush, lush orchard. It was magnificent back in July, and I hope that they're doing really well with the harvest right now as this is rolling out in September of 2021. And then as we moved out of his orchard, we had to cross the actual road and head into a neighboring orchard and go to the top of what is known as Big Hill.
The guy I bought my farm from, his name is Steve. But then across the road is Tony, and Tony Fetter's incredible human being. I'll ask him the same question, I'll ask two other people the same question, and come up with three different answers, which help me figure out what I'm going to, what's best for me.
Mm-hmm.
So any one of them I can call on a whim, and they'll help you as much as they know how. And, mm-hmm. you know, that's what is awesome about everyone out here is, you know, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it's just everybody's out here. This is one of my, like, our dog, I used to walk her every day when we'd come up here, and you kind of sit on the knoll, and there's no sounds. You can see cars moving down here. There's no sounds. There's just a little bit of a breeze going. It's dead quiet, and it's just a place of reflection, in my opinion. But, so the two I call them mountain peaks, but the two peaks.
Can we get outside?
Please.
Yeah, let's get outside and take a little peek.
Experience.
Yeah.
If we could see a little bit further, you can just see fruit all along this corridor, right tucked up against the mountain.
So Adams County, from this vantage point here, am I looking at all of Adams County here?
Yep. basically.
So the apple belt of Pennsylvania.
Yeah. That's Biglerville.
Okay.
Beyond that, the two peaks is Gettysburg.
All right. Wow. Gettysburg. Wow.
So looking out over, I have no idea what the history of this was during the war, but there had to have been something going on here.
I'm sure.
You know, but it's on a clear day beyond Gettysburg, obviously, is Maryland. You can see clear down into Maryland.
I hope, Siderville, that you get a sense of just how awe-inspiring it was to be on the top of Big Hill with Ben Kishbach. From there, we headed back into Fetter's Orchard, went down the hill, and then crossed over into Ben's Orchard, and then took a tour of the area where they actually do the pressing and a lot of the fermentation of the cider for Big Hill Cider Works. Do look for a video of that production room up at the Cider Chat YouTube channel. Once done with our amazing tour and taking a peek into his barn on the property and the barrel room, we headed back to the tasting room and met up with Troy, where I'm going to take you to next as we move into that conversation. Here I am sitting in the beautiful tasting room at Big Hill Cider Works, brand spanking new building right now, right? Kind of like a couple years old. Yeah. In the front of your orchard, Troy. And Ben, you're up the road a little bit. You two guys, I got a little bit of the backstory running around this area with Ben recently that you met in a different lifetime almost, I'm sure, right?
Yeah,
in automotive.
Yes, it was.
Ben, you said you had a homebrew background, but Troy, was this self-taught?
Pretty much. I mean, there obviously, any of us that are self-taught, we bought a couple of good books and mm-hmm. dug in, and you know. But the funny thing is most of the books that were at my disposal in 2005, 2006, when I was starting, were actually books that I had to unlearn myself from in a lot of ways, you know. Because mm-hmm. really, there's the American winemaker's method of making cider, where you're treating everything with SO2, and you're really forcing your control on every aspect. Mm-hmm. And then there's the UK version of cider making, essentially, as far as the small producers, where it's very hands off. You're letting natural yeast and bacteria play a part in it, you know. So for me, I was on a fast-paced crash course on not wanting to be like what American ciders were known as, you know.
So
I started up to that point,
huh.
Right. So I started wild fermenting stuff in the same room where we press, in the same room I make modern ciders. I mean, we make modern style ciders that I do force my control on them more because they need to be consistent if they're on the shelf. You know what I mean? But then mm-hmm. we have wild fermented stuff that there's nothing but the yeast on the skin of the fruit, mm-hmm. the wild yeast bacteria, and mm-hmm. there are ways you can manipulate that just in your timing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And temperature and stuff like that. But really, it's allowing our place as
terroir of your place, yeah.
Our place is to come through in the bottle, you know.
Yeah.
And the Basque region of Spain, a lot of English cider making. That's where a lot of our heritage, well, I guess it's traditional ciders now, and our wild fermented ciders, that's really our approach. You know, it's hands off. I mean, for some of the traditional ciders, I've found certain specific varieties of apples that I'll pitch a commercial yeast.
Mm-hmm.
Portions of it are wild fermented, and I think it's kind of the best of both worlds, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. in that regard. But the wild fermented stuff we do, there's no Brett pitched. It's literally just...
Mm-hmm.
And there's an amazing amount of control in that because the apples come from the same place every year, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think mm-hmm. they're almost more consistent in some ways than...
The modern? Modern
yeah.
style? Yeah.
Yeah.
You have been in business, this is your...
Eight years.
8 years now. I thought it was seven.
What do you wish you knew back then that you now know?
probably that cider making isn't as profitable as you'd hope it would be. That's probably the one thing. That being said, I'm glad I didn't know it because I might not have done it. I love what we're doing. Yeah. I mean, I grew up here and I legitimately love. I wouldn't want to be a brewer. I enjoy making wines, but I like taking the road less traveled, and that's really what cider is. You know, we were hopeful for more. I think a lot of us were in 2014-15 when cider was blowing up. I think we were all hopeful that it was going to be something more in a way than what it has become, you know what I mean, as far as a percentage of the alcohol market, because that's really what puts the strain on us. You know, living in a lot of ways, living in a beer world price-wise, you're making a fruit wine, essentially. That's where the whole problem exists. And to me, the instant everybody started going into cans and smaller formats,
it took a hit.
It was a race to the bottom, you know, and we have never gone into cans. I don't think we ever will. We do a limited amount of 12 ounce just to have a footprint in distributors in
Pennsylvania. Right, so you do have some cans.
No, just 12 ounce bottles.
Just 12 ounce bottles,
it's,
okay.
We have a bottler that was built by friends of ours that we use. It's got automotive components on it.
Okay, right.
But so for us, you know, being that we do everything, we at least can keep a decent margin because we're not subbing out bottling, we're not subbing out, and you know what I mean. But but really, it's nothing that we plan on growing. What we plan on growing is this building right here and bringing people out to experience the South Mountain Fruit Belt, this region.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I think that's where our future is as far as making a living that we both can feel.
Having a tasting room that's active and
correct.
Using it
correct.
For a and, number of different functions.
And I think that's what we need to do is grow the... cider has stayed a regional thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the girls that works here with us that I've known forever, her husband lives in Missouri, and to him what's cider? Yeah, really, and that's what we're up against. But I think if you push the regionality of it and make it that people, you know, take day trips to come here, I think that's where some of the romance of it allows you to cultivate a following.
There's really no reason why this South Mountain Fruit Belt should be any different than Napa Valley.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, for apples versus grapes. You know,
well, I mean, come on. It's just incredible. Yeah. Everywhere you look, there's apple orchards. And the whole Four Seasons region, you're just seeing a spectacular view of the orchards like nothing else, you know, in the area. It's really spectacular.
You know, when I first bought the farm in 2010, I had, like I had said, I had researched cider making, cider apples, and I was hearing these names for cider apples, you know, Chisel Jersey, Michelin, Kingston Black, Dabinet, all of them in 05, 06, when I started just submerging myself in cider, when there wasn't a ton of information out there. You know, a lot of what I was reading was coming from Cummins' website, where I could order trees, you know, a couple others, but... In 2010, when I bought the farm, I placed an order to do an acre and a half test block, is what I referred to it, you know, and I planted a bunch of golden russet, those Bulmers, Norman, a lot of English bittersweets,
Select.
Bitter sharps, and then by 2013, 14, I had a pretty good idea of which ones I liked and which ones I didn't, and because I had used them in 13 and 14, I had had two harvests under my belt. It was limited fruit, but it really gave me an idea what we were, you know,
I think the first Kingston Black we did 10 cases, 5 cases, something like that. And we were so happy to have a Kingston Black in a bottle.
Right.
And
that's
what I say now, having kegs of some of that stuff and golden russet. And this past year being one of the best golden russets we've ever done.
Mm-hmm. But
I think we're just starting to get our stride of how things are farmed.
Because essentially from our standpoint, you know, by 2014, I had determined that I wanted to do some interstem trees that had a larger root system that I could stand a tree without a post. And I had Adams County Nursery custom bud my favorite English cider apple, which is Stoke Red. and I went with Stoke Red and Somerset Red Streak and a couple others. But now that that test block, it's funny because now that that test block is in its 12th leaf, 11th, 12th mm-hmm. leaf now, mm-hmm. now I'm starting to understand the difference, really understand the differences in the root stocks, because it, the flavor of the fruit actually changes as those trees become more established.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And yeah. I, to me, going to the inner stems was a good choice, because I think any time you can get those roots deep in the ground, and for us being right off the Appalachian Mountains, you know, you have a high mineral content. It's a limestone soil. And when you can tap into that, I think that's what sets the fruit apart, and that's what should set the ciders apart, you know,
definitely.
On down
well
the road.
Said. Yeah, well you know? Said, yeah. Because, I mean, really, your orchard's pretty young, you know?
Yeah.
As old as they are, they're young.
Yeah, they're super young.
Correct,
and, you know,
yeah.
Some cider makers wouldn't touch them until they're, like, 100 years old, or, you know.
Yeah.
Or you know the difference between that.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because even those York Imperial trees that were planted in 1967, when I taste the fruit off of those trees versus a Ramey York tree, which is a different strain of York on a semi-dwarf tree, I mean, the fruit is just completely different.
Yeah, and that's
exactly. why I'm hesitant to ever pull those trees out of the ground as long as they're producing, because you have something there.
Yeah.
I think it was Steve Wood that was talked about, you know, growing a lot of trees on more of like a 111 rootstock or on standard rootstocks and stuff. I don't disagree. As time goes on with our orchard, I see it and I'm thinking, I have a trellis block of cider fruit.
Yeah,
then I have a freestanding block, and I'm looking at it going, for cider fruit, I don't know that there's a reason to do high density trees unless you're more concerned about selling the fruit elsewhere, and that's really not where we do sell some.
You
of
are selling because you're.
But we're producing
so
a
much.
Lot more
yeah.
than we can. Yeah, right. But it's still about growing it in a way to make the best cider.
Yeah, yeah, no.
I'm not looking at it as far as I can have X amount more bushels to sell.
Right.
To so-and-so, you know what I mean? And I think that's crop load. It all plays a part. But it's hard to keep my mind occupied. And this is one profession that has pretty much done it.
Bravo.
Ben might disagree, but.
Well, I could see it. So let's talk about those barrels that I saw in mm-hmm. the barn. What do you got going on there? And do you have a strategy with barrels? And this is barrel aging
well,
new to you? Or?
No. Actually, we've backed off the throttle on our barrel aging. Mm-hmm. Is the reality, only because we've determined that our wild fermented ciders and traditional ciders don't really benefit from sitting for a couple of years in barrel. Mm-hmm. As far as our wild ferments, we were developing some off flavors that we didn't like. An apple's one of those things where unless you're aging it for tannic structure or to mellow out harsh tannins, it's more like white wine production to me, in that you on those cider specific varieties, you ferment and age through the winter and you bottle in the spring summer.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't benefit from spending years in barrel or
so you're turning
cooperage.
Over the barrels pretty quickly.
We're turning them over fairly quickly, and we've even grown out of, you know, I don't need a ton of wood character, especially if I'm using cider-specific fruit that has tannic structure on its own. So we've gone more to, like, neutral Italian red wine barrels. First couple times you use them, you'll get some mild tannin backbone from
the barrel itself.
The barrel itself, but after that it's really
the apples that
neutral,
you go for.
Truly neutral. Yeah.
So I'm wondering, because, you know, what I'm getting about Big Hill is that you really have a dominant focus on varietals that we would see from other countries versus in the U.S. No? I mean, you know.
I love Golden Russet. I love Black Twig.
So you have the Golden,
you know, we
Russia
have the Spitzenberg we use a lot of. We like Gold Rush. For a modern apple, that's a very versatile apple, from the modern ciders to the traditional ciders to a point.
Mm-hmm.
It was, And it still is. It was more about leaving no stone unturned. I mean, there wasn't an apple we weren't willing to... Actually, right out that window, we have tons of crab apples that I chip-butted onto semi-dwarf rootstocks.
All self-taught, doing all that grafting, right? Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. He did full, like... Grafting.
Top working trees.
Yeah. I chip butted those, which was a technique that I'm surprised I had the patience for, to be honest with you. Or that it was a success.
You had the success that you did.
Yeah, it was like 45 out of 48 trees. I told Ben, I'm like, I'm never going to do this again. My track record is excellent.
You did it while you could, right? Which is really a smart move because, you know, looking forward, as you kind of age into this, you're going to be able to sit back on what you've created here, and as your trees actually get more, you know, a little bit more sunk into the ground, if you will, it's going to really kind of change your options. You did it while I feel this, and I you know, you can talk a lot about this while I've been hanging with you, Ben, is that you're going 100 miles an hour and you say, like, being on that wheel over and over again. Mm-hmm. But maybe the key is that you're running 100 miles now, so the 20-year plan is in 20 years. You don't have to. Like, you establish...
God, I hope you're right.
You establish an orchard, though. You know, you establish an orchard in a really short amount of time. You drive around here. It's, like, mind-boggling what you right now have to work with. I mean, it is really tremendous. So if you look, I mean, what is the 10-year plan?
Find the life-work balance. That's honestly for us where it's at, you know. Yeah. I mean, I tend farmers markets where I sell tree fruit and berries that I grow here. And more than that, I love creating ciders and I love growing fruit. Mm-hmm. Like all the other stuff, I wish it didn't have to be.
Right.
And that's where us getting people to come out here plays such a huge part in, I think. You know, because
we work so hard. And we have over the past 8 years to build our wholesale network.
Yeah.
And we were forced into that. We were kind of pigeonholed into that because of the laws in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And laws not only in Pennsylvania, but in local municipalities.
Okay.
So we now have this space, which we were trying to have 8 years ago. And if we had had this 8 years ago, where we are today would have been totally different.
Correct.
You know,
because
we would not have reached out to as... to our wholesale network would not be near as big as what it is.
Correct.
And we still sell.
We kept the lights on for 5, 6 years, 7 years with
just wholesale.
Very little retail dollars and self-distributing all that wholesale. It's what dictated that 60-70% of what we sell are those modern ciders. They're what kept the lights on.
Mm-hmm.
We did it our way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm as proud of those ciders as I am of our traditional ciders because I feel there's something more to them.
Right.
But nonetheless, that was the tough part about it for us, and that's still what we struggle with trying to... And I think we're getting
there. Work-life.
Yeah. I think we're getting there.
Yeah.
But part of that is, I think, checking your ego at the door and saying, are we better off to get smaller to obtain that than to try and get bigger?
Yeah.
Because our identity's not wrapped up in how big Big Hill gets.
Mm-hmm.
We were fortunate to see the writing on the wall.
As soon as we did.
Yeah. So that if you do it right, it's a slow road. It's never going to be a fast road. Getting to where we want to be is going to take a little more time.
Yeah.
But you are right. We have the infrastructure in place, and we don't have a ton of debt.
Mm, good.
But that's what's enabled us to do things our way.
Yeah.
We weren't forced to get bigger because we had to or get out.
The investors.
Right.
But now it's going to pull into a different skill set as you move forward, which is the role of the publican, which is a very defined role. And some people could, like, really play that. You know, the publican is the owner, the operator of the tasting room, and knows how to do the schmooze. I mean, I could count, as a craft beer writer and as a cider podcaster doing this for more years than I want to count, you know the good publicans out there, so be careful what you ask for. Make sure that you know what you're signing up for.
But on a Saturday night,
but you're pretty gregarious, so that's good.
When it's busy here, the two of us, naturally, we're in conversations looking at other stuff that needs to happen. So, but that's what when we're out here and our friends show up, and or it's a night where you know nobody here, like, to me, that's what's really gratifying.
That's exciting.
It's
yeah.
just
yeah.
a whole new group of people right. that you can introduce and yeah. have a conversation
yeah.
with. And then
yeah.
we've had customers that, you know, there's two ladies that come all the time, and they give me a hard time about my fire making skills. Because one time I was trying to make
a fire. You have a fire outside.
We have a fire pit outside. And the wood was wet, and it was just not in my favor.
Oh my
and they
goodness.
Had a blast with it. And yeah. I love every week that I see them.
Yeah.
And it's just good conversation. And that's what's neat is developing those. What we've really concentrated on was developing those wholesale relationships. And now we're building these retail relationships with customers who like coming out here.
That's fantastic.
Because of what it is. And that's what's great.
And to what you said, we don't have to force anything here in that role because one, we've got the mountains right behind us. We both mountain bike. We have friends that are active in that lifestyle. We're active in that community. I not as much as he.
Right.
It was a way for me to get myself back in shape. But that being said, I play music. We've really sunken our roots in with our live music program here.
Yeah.
You know, we have live music every Saturday. We could have done Saturday and Sunday to have like an acoustic act on Sunday. But what we really tried to do here is we have music every Saturday, and we try and have all solid acts. Even it doesn't have to be somebody that's well known every week, but we have good musicians come here and play.
And it's golden.
I was a part of that scene for years when I was in the automotive industry, so it was a natural fit.
Perfect.
The mountains behind us, mountain biking, hiking, camping, it's a natural fit. What we're having happen here is we have people gravitating toward this who are like us, and it has been easy for us
to roll into
that, because we're not trying to make this something that we aren't. We're trying to make it something we are. And the cool thing is there are people from all walks of life that come here. You know what I mean? And that was something that was important to us when we opened the doors in September in the middle of COVID too. I wanted anybody to be welcome. I wanted people from any political persuasion, any religion, whatever, to be able to come here,
feel welcome,
forget about all that,
and find common ground, and just be decent to each other. And that's
cider.
I've told a lot of people that, and just recently I've had a couple of our patrons come here and say, "Remember when you told me last year?" And they say, "It's happening." And that's when I get goosebumps, because
the future looks bright.
You can't force that.
Yeah, yeah.
It has to be in here.
Yeah, I hear you.
For real.
Yeah.
Because if it's not, it's not going to be real.
Yeah.
And I think that's where, you know, we don't have the dollars to put into a huge facility to where investors put money in, you know, and they do their thing, and when they open the doors, there's thousands of people. What we have here is being built one weekend at a time.
Yeah.
But I think there's more staying power.
Yeah.
In that.
Yeah. Well,
so,
you're building as you go.
That's
so you
it.
Have a lot of control over that.
That's it.
And your heart and soul is into it 100%.
Yep.
I could totally feel it off everywhere. Is there a cider trail around here? Are you part of a cider trail, or is that set up?
Not really yet.
Not yet, but so that's an operative word. Yeah, you know, it's all about that. Yeah,
there are beer trails that we are parts of.
There are wine trails.
Wine trails.
No cider trails yet.
Not yet. All right, well, I'm going to make another little, you know, forecast. There's going to be a cider trail. There's going to be more cideries here. And, you know, once we get out of this, the hellfire of, you know, pandemicville, at some point, it's going to keep on. All your work, all your hard work, all those medals I see up there and those beautiful display of bottles are going to pay off. So I wish you the best on that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I wish you the best on your podcast, too.
Thank you.
Because you do a good job.
Great.
Thank you. Yeah.
The tasting room at Big Hill Cider Works is open on the weekends. So if you're in Adams County, at least I know if I was in Adams County, I would be there hanging out because they make really good quality cider. The location is beautiful. Outdoor seating, you know, a fire if it's chilly out. It's just a great place. And, you know, you just met the makers. And what else can I say about it? It is a destination hotspot. And I do want to say a little bit later that evening, after the interview was over, I was hanging out with friends led by Erica Jeter, who is a cider enthusiast, a fine cider maker herself. She hails from Virginia. And she hooked us all up with an amazing tasting of cider from the UK. We had our friends from Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company, Little Pomona, Tom Oliver, Martin from Pilton Cider, couple more, and it was exquisite because they're all working with the same juice but doing their own special twist on that. If you want to hear about that tasting, a little bit more about this cider-fueled road trip, I did an episode on it. It's episode 281, titled Cider-Fueled Road Trip to New York and PA. And you could check it out because we were recording it, and kind of gave me an idea to record more people after they had a few ciders reading the labels. I thought that Erica did a supreme job, and kudos to her. So thanks for the inspiration, as always, Erica. And to everyone out there, once again, head to Adams County. We're going to be having another episode from this region from a cidery by the name of Plowman coming up in the queue in the next couple weeks here. So you could stay tuned for that. In the meanwhile, I'm going to take a little pause here, and I'm going to come back with a little bit of a note from a listener of Cider Chat. I actually have two things to catch you up on. One is that on episode 284 with the brothers Trevor and Nolan O'Malley of Cider Scene, and that was part of the series on Ciders Media Today, I had mentioned that there was going to be a bonus clip to patrons of Cider Chat, and that bonus clip is now on at the Cider Chat Patreon site, but it's open to everybody. So if you're not a patron, you could still go there and listen to this audio clip. And what they are doing is sharing best practices for business websites for cideries. It's a very short clip. It's under 6 minutes, but it's really packed with some great info. So I really want to encourage you to go there. Again, just Google Cider Chat Patreon page, and Patreon spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And while there, do consider becoming a patron of Cider Chat today to help keep this podcast moving forward into Season 7. Now, the other little tip I have is from an email listener and someone who has definitely supported this podcast over the years big time, and that is William Grota. He is now the cider maker at New Salem Hard Cider, which is a local cidery and orchard nearby. My special spot is Ciderville, and I've talked about it so many times on the podcast because I have a deep appreciation for the owner, Carol B. Hillman, who is now in her 90s, 90 years young. That woman is just incredible. She spent her lifetime teaching school children, wrote many books, and then revitalized this orchard. And the same pruner has been working on it for over 30 years. It's essentially considered a cider apple tree museum, if you will. It's an orchard museum, I should say. And I did an episode with Carol and William, and that was episode 190, titled Cider Revitalizes a 1750 Colonial Orchard. And it's based in Massachusetts. Well, William, with friends, just did a fun little video clip, kind of spoofing on the way that folks here in Massachusetts talk, probably more folks out towards the Boston area for sure. There is definitely a bit of my own association in here in that I do use wicked quite a bit in my speech pattern. You know, oh, that's wicked cool, or it's wicked awesome. And it's pretty much a Massachusetts coined phrase. Well, this took it a bit further, and it's all about cider. It's super cool. I'm going to be posting it at the Cider Chat Facebook page. You could check it out and just see how really fine marketing is done. The cool thing is it was all done with a green screen, and I hope that this encourages you out there in Ciderville worldwide to keep on upscaling your work and your social media presence, because it does go a very long way. Either way, it's tons of fun. I love it. I love New Salem Orchard. I love all the folks there, and I think you will enjoy it too. It's about under 3 minutes. So again, check it out at the Cider Chat Facebook page.
Bravo!
And I think that about sums it up for this week's episode 289. Next week, we'll be back with Kurt Henry of Taddy Bogle Cider Works, also in Pennsylvania. So between now and then, if you haven't hit the subscribe button or the follow along for Cider Chat, please do, because there's a lot more great Cider Chat to come. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like ponds. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like ponds. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason
why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like ponds.
Oh, yes, we do.
We love orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh, yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like ponds.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.
Yeehaw!